Hello everyone, welcome to the October teleclass of the free WHO teleclass series on infection control hosted by Weber Training. My name is Benedetta Legranzi. I work at WHO and I'm the technical lead of Clean Care, Safer Care program within the patient safety program dedicated to infection control. I'm very pleased to be here today to chair this teleclass and introduce my colleague and dear friend and collaborator, Julie Storr, who is an international consultant today to the WHO Patient Safety Program, in particular for the African Partnerships for Patient Safety Program, as well as the president, the current president of the Infection Prevention Society of UK and Ireland. As you will learn from her, infection control, in particular to minimize healthcare-associated infections, is one of the 12 patient safety action areas on which the African Partnership is focusing. And this is why we are here today to learn from her personal expertise and huge experience with this partnership program on infection control, in particular within the program regarding African healthcare settings. Therefore, with no further ado, I let you, Julie, present on implementing infection control through a patient safety partnership approach in Africa. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Benedetta, and hello to everybody who is listening. I am going to start with the first slide by setting the context. Now, I know that some of you will be familiar with the African Partnerships for Patient Safety Program in its broadest sense, and today I'm going to drill right down into the infection prevention and control aspects and really explore how this can be used as a lever to drive change and improvement. There are many colleagues who work in the field of infection prevention and control across the world who are involved in one way or another with the challenges posed by implementation of infection control solutions, particularly in a low-resource context, and that is exactly what African Partnerships for Patient Safety, or APPS, APPS, is all about. So what we see here is some very brief context, but it's important from an implementation science perspective. The WHO Patient Safety Program, as many of you will be aware, is coming up to its 10th anniversary of existence as a program within WHO. When it was formed, just under 10 years ago, it was concerned with raising awareness of patient safety as a global health issue. It was concerned with advocating and inspiring passion to make things happen, to make change and improvement happen at national levels. And logically, therefore, it was concerned with securing political commitment to the cause or movement that is safer healthcare. And how this was achieved in part and has been developed subsequently was through the development of standards, of the evidence base, of guidelines, and many of you will be familiar with the WHO guidelines on hand hygiene in healthcare that Dr. Legranzi was a key leader on, and also the development of practical tools. Now, from the literature, we know that to implement successfully an improvement, all of these components are required to be addressed as the critical foundations for success. And African Partnerships for Patient Safety brings all of this together into a unique and discrete program. And if I move on to the next slide, the focus of the next part will be on implementing infection control through patient safety partnerships in particular. And it will focus on Africa, but the lessons that are emerging from the stories that are developing are applicable in any setting where a partnership-based approach is used, and particularly where there is a partnership between developed and developing countries. So APPS is about moving towards safer practices. It's about implementing patient safety solutions, and at its heart, APPS zooms in on infection prevention and control. The World Health Organization define a patient safety solution or intervention as any system that's designed, or any intervention that's designed, to demonstrate the ability to prevent patient harm stemming from processes of care. And on the next slide, whilst there are three central objectives of APPS, clearly partnership development is one and spread of improvement is another. In terms of improving the processes of care and preventing harm as a result of this, hospital patient safety improvement is what is it. And Bernadetta mentioned, moving on to the next slide, the 12 patient safety action areas around which all of the work of all of the partners, and even at the national and political level, hinges around these 12 patient safety action areas. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about each of these 12. The time does not permit this. But today is about where healthcare-associated infection and its prevention fits within this partnership approach, and with a particular focus on evaluation. On the next slide, just a pause to mention the value that partnerships can bring. We know from documents that have been produced by the World Health Organization as far back as 2008, specifically related to the prevention of infection in healthcare, that the solutions exist to control and prevent infections. We know many of them are described as simple, low cost, and practical, and that an institutional culture of safe healthcare is critical to the prevention and control of healthcare-associated infections. So how can working in partnership, teams working together across continents, contribute to making sure that this actually happens? And the APPS approach is based upon this solid platform of developing a model of joint planning, as you'll see from the next slide, importantly for today's talk, joint implementation, and equally importantly so that we can continue to build and improve and ensure spread is maximized, joint evaluation between both individuals and organizations. So the next slide recaps on the actual improvement cycle that's used in the APPS approach that some of you will be familiar with from previous webinars. This six-step improvement cycle is all about helping to gain stakeholder buy-in at the very start of improving infection prevention and control. Stakeholder buy-in of both the problems but also the potential solutions for safer infection prevention practice, and buy-in for the implementation approaches and methodology. And that emerges from the literature as central to success of any improvement initiative. So a quick walk through the six-step improvement cycle starts with the development of partnerships. It builds then and moves on to the needs assessment or situational analysis. And from this analysis or this baseline assessment, gaps in infection prevention and control and patient safety are identified, and they form the backbone of the subsequent action plan and the actions or implementation that is required to address some of these gaps. And as you will see moving through the talk, very small scale steps, very targeted interventions to address both structures and processes, but also underpinned by this partnership approach. And evaluation and review is important, and I'll share some of the lessons learned from the partnership evaluation, which are helping to refine the infection prevention approaches that are used. So the six-step approach is designed to help with adoption, to help the key people who are required to make the key decisions to adopt safer practices. And the next slide gives you one of the front pages of this baseline assessment, this analytical tool that generates hundreds of pieces of data to guide implementation plans. And if we zoom right in on the next slide on action area 5, in addition to understanding stakeholders, successful implementation also depends on understanding the context not just the political context, but the economic context, the infrastructure context, the environmental factors, socio-cultural factors, as well as trying to identify the state of readiness of all of the key actors involved. And the situational analysis and other tools that have been co-developed by the African partnerships really come together to guide what happens next, to guide implementation. And you see here the questions that are asked within Action Area 5 do start by addressing some of the infrastructures and clearly enabling the identification of gaps that will then form the basis of the implementation plan. The assessment also addresses human resources and goes on to look at policies and guidelines and availability and access to the necessary resources for improvement. Coupled with the situational analysis, if we move on to the next slide, is a tool called Improving Patient Safety First Steps. And here I've lifted out the actual part of this tool that relates to the prevention of healthcare-associated infection. And I drill in here to two key assessments that form the backbone of everything that happens next. One of them has been mentioned already, and that is the WHO core components for infection control assessment. And the other is the WHO hand hygiene self-assessment framework that I know many of you will be familiar with from previous Weber teleclasses and may even be using that tool. Both of these together help to develop a robust implementation plan. And moving on to the next slide, you see a visual image of this freely available for download tool from WHO that centres in on the core requirements if infection prevention is to be addressed satisfactorily. And what jumps out of that resource is this quote here of the utmost importance, being basic, indispensable and necessary for any infection prevention and control program to meet its objectives. That's what this document is about. It lays out in black and white very clearly those things that are of the utmost importance, that are basic but indispensable for progress to be made. And on the next slide, you see a list of the broad headings of that document and how improvement can be framed. And this relates very much to the start of African Partnerships for Patient Safety. It was driven back in 2008 by the political level ministers of health across the region of Africa coming together to identify what they believed were the barriers that needed to be addressed. And essentially, these headings are where partners start to address infection prevention and control improvement. So not only the organisation, but the presence of guidelines, the requirements of human resources, both trained and skilled workers, but human resources to drive infection prevention and control programmes. And many of the partners who we have worked with to date begin their improvement journey with an absence or a gap of a team or an identified individual to drive forward improvement. And that therefore acts as a very simple and easy to target improvement. It's not easy to implement, but it makes it very clear where you can start. And working together in partnership with colleagues in other partner hospitals, both in Europe, the UK and beyond, we can begin to start to build capacity around infection prevention and control expertise at the hospital level. These core components therefore address the organisations, the tools, the resources, and they, as you can see from this list, many of the aspects that WHO say should be necessary for a successful infection control programme per se mirror the multimodal improvement strategy that has been a feature of the work of the WHO first Global Patient Safety Challenge. And what you end up with, using the situational analysis, using patient safety first steps, is an implementation plan, a blueprint for action on healthcare-associated infection and patient safety in its broadest sense, and that is what partners use to guide all subsequent activity. So to give you a flavour of what's happened in the years since APPS was launched in 2009, the next slide begins to introduce the infection control story so far, up to 2013. And to recap on the next slide, we have 14 hospital-to-hospital partnerships. The first wave, as we call this, started back in 2009, and that was built on by a range of other hospital-to-hospital partnerships between Europe and Africa. And we now have hospitals in 14 countries of Africa partnered with 14 hospitals across mainland Europe and the UK. I mentioned earlier that one of the key aspects of the whole approach is evaluation. That six-step improvement cycle ends in evaluation, but then you repeat the cycle of assessing, identifying gaps, developing action plans, implementing, evaluating, a very conventional approach to improvement. And what we have with African Partnerships for Patient Safety is a whole raft of learning from evaluation that takes place across individual hospitals, many of it relating to infection prevention and control and hand hygiene, but some of it relating to the findings of the situational analysis and how progress has been made across all of those areas. And I will share with you some of the findings that are emerging. But as you can see here, in addition to the local evaluation of improvement, we have been working with partners in each of these hospitals through a range of different methods to really try to develop a depth and breadth of learning or evaluation. And we have been working with groups, running focus groups, targeting healthcare workers, healthcare waste management staff, porters, medical residents, nurses and other teams. We've undertaken semi-structured interviews, targeting local leads, often infection prevention and control leads. And we've undertaken observations, both in theatres and on medical wards, and observing healthcare workers in their day-to-day workflow, trying to look at some of the contextual issues that will help us refine with each partner the approaches that are being taken and constantly improve. So there's two levels of the evaluation, that which is collected and driven at the individual hospital to hospital level, and some central evaluation data that's helping to feed back into the local level and to improve where improvements are still required. Evaluation is integral, it can't understate this, it's part of implementation, and we're starting to see findings that are helping make better progress with local implementation plans. So for the next few slides, I will focus on each part of that multimodal strategy, addressing the components that emerge from that WHO core components of infection prevention and control program tool or resource, to see where we are seeing barriers and achievements and how some of the local individual hospital-to-hospital partnerships are truly implementing improvement and building successful programs to tackle infection prevention and control. So we're seeing, if we move on to the next slide, some of the findings relating to improvements in the systems, the infrastructures. We're seeing what I would class as significant progress around training and education through a partnership-based approach. We're seeing some progress in building capacity around surveillance and auditing and monitoring. But in many of the hospitals still, there is very rudimentary surveillance. So there's a huge gap there that's ripe to be addressed moving forward. And there is some work already beginning to emerge with colleagues who are working on infection prevention and control, and for example, the Infection Control Africa Network are beginning to try and build capacity around surveillance in local hospitals across Africa. But in many countries that APS is working, there are national surveillance systems for major endemic and selected diseases, but at the individual hospital level, it is quite rudimentary. And the microbiology laboratory support that can help to build that capacity, again, is often in need of building up itself. So we're seeing progress also on advocacy, on promotions, on marketing of infection prevention and control, and I'll share some examples in the next few slides. We're beginning to see some examples of culture change. Very difficult to measure this, and I think all healthcare facilities, wherever they are in the world, will agree that measuring culture change and changing culture itself is one of the most complex areas of patient safety improvement, where using the partnership approach, there is the potential for learning from both sides of the partnership. So moving on to the next slide, some general examples of how infection prevention is being implemented, where there are examples of success and where some of the barriers are. In terms of capacity building, we've seen from some of the preliminary evaluation in excess of 2,000 workers across a subset of those 14 hospitals being trained on patient safety, and much of that includes infection prevention and much of that centres on hand hygiene. And many institutions are using a cascade approach. Most recently, we saw in our partnership hospital in Kazisi in Uganda, they have been running during 2014 the trainer patient safety infection prevention program, and they've invited colleagues from countries all over sub-Saharan Africa. And this will be a feature of the APS news that will be issued during October for those of you who are part of this program, who have joined as interested parties and who can therefore access these resources, and more of that towards the end. We're beginning to see what we're calling this bi-directional transfer of expertise and the co-development of solutions and resources and tools and approaches. As I mentioned in the previous slide, we are beginning to see some evidence of preliminary surveillance systems, often in the absence of laboratory support, and many of the partners are beginning to write up some of their learnings and findings from how they're approaching this. Some of the partners have been working across with the UK European hospitals to develop prevalence studies where they can gain a snapshot of certain healthcare-associated infections. And that's been happening particularly from the work that I've been involved with in Malawi and Uganda. In terms of infrastructure, I think it's fair to say that being part of this program itself does act as a catalyst for structural change. It identifies gaps that small-scale effort and energy and the securing of resources that are often available with a good business case can yield positive results, and we've seen, for example, incinerators being built to address some of the barriers relating to waste management in healthcare. I'll talk a little bit more about how some of the infrastructure relating to hand hygiene is being addressed, but in terms of the local production of alcohol-based hand sanitizers in the absence of available products in the marketplace, we are hearing feedback from colleagues who are working in hospitals across Africa who are producing the alcohol-based hand rub, and the word empowerment continually is being used. Staff who have access to the means to clean their hands with these life-saving products feel empowered to contribute to the safety of both themselves and of the patients who they serve. And in some hospitals, as you can see from the image here, mobile hand wash stations are being utilised. Moving on to the next slide, I think it's important to really contextualise infection prevention and control improvements within this patient safety approach and how the two can be mutually beneficial. So as a result of participating in a programme that has patient safety improvement at its heart, using the lever or the doorway or the entrance door of infection prevention and control, local hospitals are beginning to build on some of the work that already existed, and some hospitals are beginning to start work from scratch, for example, around patient and public and civil society engagement and involvement. Some of the hospitals have developed patient bills of rights and healthcare worker bill of rights that have been displayed in public areas, and that are beginning to talk about the importance of safety in healthcare. Going back to the example of the trainer workshop that took place in Kazisa, Uganda earlier this year, we're beginning to see the emergence of what we call South-South partnerships spontaneously developing between hospitals in different countries across the region of Africa. And again, a recent workshop that I'll mention moving forward, where we would run a whole 2 or 3 day program to build capacity around producing the WHO formula for alcohol-based hand rub, has resulted in some development of strong partnerships between hospitals in the region of Africa, supported by their partners in Europe and UK, but really building this spread, this element of patient safety partnerships that will feed back in and help to sustain some of these improvements over the longer term. Some of the feedback we're having also from colleagues on both arms in relation to infection prevention and control particularly, is that this approach, this working together face-to-face and remotely using different media, is helping to progress a shared understanding of patient safety issues that are themselves universal. The language of infection prevention and control and the challenges we face are on different magnitudes of scale, but there is a universality here of barriers and challenges that working in partnership is helping to address. The next slide shows some of the results that we have seen from the situational analysis that show some progress around some specific infection prevention and control aspects, such as healthcare waste management, access to alcohol-based hand rub, and some broader in patient safety issues as well. And you can see here an image from Gonder Hospital in Ethiopia, where local manufacturer in the pharmacy department of an alcohol-based hand sanitizer is providing access to the means to clean hands in the absence of running water. Moving on to address some of the specifics, what you see here is, with regard to knowledge and training, we have seen in Mali, which is Malawi, infection control nurse trained in the UK and supported remotely. We've seen 100% of staff in our hospital in Uganda trained on hand hygiene and utilising morning chapel as the main vehicle to spread learning and training around hand hygiene improvements. And in Senegal, long-distance hand hygiene class is offered on improvement weekly through technology that links up with Geneva, and also the development of a core implementation group trained in the use of other patient safety improvement tools. So what we're seeing in all of the partnerships is the identification of local individuals, where possible local teams, and at the very least, a locally identified designated individual with the responsibility for infection prevention and control that is supported by hospital leaders and managers. And that's the building block of implementing patient safety and infection prevention improvement. The next slide now jumps back to this issue of availability of supplies. And what we've seen in a number of the hospitals is an increase in access, sometimes sporadic, but working in partnership with both hospitals in UK and mainland Europe to try to build this capacity around making alcohol-based hand rub. And some of the hospitals have managed to achieve 100% availability, with almost universal availability over time. Some hospitals with the socio-cultural and political and economic challenges have seen interruptions in supply. And there is some work that I'll mention before the end of this webinar on how we're trying to address these issues in terms of the barriers of reliability in the supply of stocks of hand hygiene products. I mentioned this elusive culture change that is a constant feature of anybody who is trying to improve infection prevention and patient safety, and how using the vehicle of infection prevention and control, patient safety now is on the agenda. It's a very tangible way of getting people talking about what is, in essence, is at the heart of patient safety, the prevention and control of infection. So in many hospitals, you'll see from this slide, patient safety principles are now an ongoing part of hospital planning, where they were not before. And using very clear examples of how you can make small-scale improvements to infection prevention and control has had a ripple effect of spreading beyond to patient safety in general. And this has influenced checklist implementation, it's influenced hospital planning, and in a number of hospital partnerships, management are now using patient safety as an integrated way of stimulating health service improvement. And the final line here on this slide with regard to Ethiopia, patient safety principles are now integrated into professional training. All of these things giving a very clear message at a hospital level that this hospital is taking patient safety seriously and it's utilising infection prevention and control implementation as a means of shouting that very loudly from the rooftops. In terms of the next slide and the issue of national policy, from the beginning of African Partnerships for Patient Safety and working as a WHO patient safety program, the importance of getting patient safety and infection prevention and control on the national policy agenda has been something that's been a central feature of all improvements. And we are, in 2013, seeing a tremendous amount of activity and progress being made here, and I'm sure future teleclasses will address this in much more detail. But as well as local progress on national policy that you can see here in Mali, in Uganda, in Senegal, Cameroon, Malawi, and Ethiopia, we're now seeing in a much more coherent way across the whole region of Africa action that's been taken and that's been supported with political mandates, which will assist anybody who is working to implement infection prevention and control improvements at a hospital level. The next slide introduces a new dimension to improving infection prevention and control, designed to assist with implementation of hand hygiene in the first instance, and designed to address some of the challenges that have been identified through African Partnerships for Patient Safety. I mentioned earlier that through the vehicle of APPS, we're kickstarting action to address some of the infrastructural challenges. We've heard loud and clear from all of the partnerships and continue to do so from hospitals that are not part of this program, that actual improvements can be severely hampered by the lack of access to the means to carry out the right practices or procedures. And hand hygiene is, of course, a very easy-to-feel example of how this presents itself in reality. So in terms of strengthening surveillance that will assist with building a strong case for spreading improvement, we're actually working very, very closely with the program that Dr. Allegranzi is involved with, which is the WHO Private Organizations for Patient Safety. Harnessing the weight of industry partners to work together transparently and collaboratively to address some of the immediate needs that are emerging from African Partnerships for Patient Safety. And one of the ideas that's been progressed right now, and that I'm working closely on with colleagues in the region of Africa, is a project to try to overcome some of the gaps that have been identified in relation to infrastructure, particularly around access to bottles in which to store alcohol hand rub products. We know from the partners who are locally producing the products, who have been trained in the WHO formulation, both in Zimbabwe this year at a workshop and in Uganda at a workshop earlier this year, that actually making the products is achievable. Actually sourcing the means to house the products to allow them to be used is presenting a significant barrier. And this is where this work with private organisations for patient safety may be offering the solution, in the short term at least, to help make sure that these life-saving products can be available to as many staff as possible. And I mentioned earlier some of the feedback that we're receiving. In a number of hospitals that are producing the product, that are sourcing the bottles to house the product, to hold the product, we are seeing a demand-driven approach. People, nurses and doctors and other ancillary healthcare workers want and are asking for and demanding these products. They want safe hands. They want to practice safely. And this gives them, as I said, and I will emphasize once again, a very, very visible way of demonstrating that they're safe practitioners. And this is one of the important components of implementation that is happening right now across 14 of the African Partnerships for Patient Safety hospitals. If we move on to the next slide, the infection prevention and control achievements that are being made, the capacity that's been built through training, but through some infrastructural support, through the development of leadership across both arms of the program, is allowing for the strengthening of an approach that in many hospitals just didn't exist before. Using this six-step improvement cycle, very systematically identifying gaps using the freely available tools, developing an action plan, implementing that action plan, using the range of resources that have been built up and developed jointly by the partners who are participating in this program, and then pulling in other resources that have been developed, for example, by the WHO First Global Patient Safety Challenge around hand hygiene, is resulting in improvements. This structured but adaptable partnership approach, this co-development of resources. And you'll see, when I come on to the final slide, how you can access these resources and how, if you're interested, you can join this patient safety infection prevention movement. Before that, we've been undertaking lots and lots of interviews, as I mentioned, qualitative feedback from partners in the UK, in Europe, in Africa, is really helping us to develop and redevelop and refine some of the resources that are there already to assist with implementation. And here are just some of the quotes that have emerged from partners across the UK who are involved in working with colleagues, leaders, practitioners in their counterpart Partnership African Hospital. And we're hearing phrases around the investment, the very human element of investment that's necessary to improve infection prevention and control, and how this has been a feature that's emerged from this partnership working. That working in partnership with colleagues in a very different environment has resulted in partners in the UK seeing things through fresh eyes. Looking at some of the approaches that have been taken in Africa influenced by constraints, and really introducing this imaginative creativity in trying to address some of the challenges that everybody faces, this universality of challenges relating to infection prevention and control. And we will be building on this evaluation, culminating at the end of this year with a very comprehensive report that will be published and made freely available for people who are involved in patient safety, infection prevention and control partnerships, across Europe and the African region and beyond. Sarah Fraser, one of the gurus of implementation science, I think summarizes nicely some of the issues here, which is relating to innovation that's often quoted as being central to implementation, innovation, adoption, adaptation. And she says when we talk about spreading innovation, we have to be careful about how we define the word innovation. Although we need to recognize that people often need to reinvent locally, we don't want people to invent locally when in fact solutions are already out there that they can copy. And what African Partnerships for Patient Safety is demonstrating with its unique feature centered around infection prevention and control and hand hygiene improvement is that it is possible to take existing tools and approaches and solutions and to work together, teams across continents, to adapt and to copy where necessary and to redefine and recontextualize some of the approaches that are taken that can act as a trigger for this unified action that's resulting in change and improvement across many, many hospitals now. The final slide here highlights the home page of the APPS registration website. And for those who are involved in patient safety partnerships, for those who are involved or interested in improving infection prevention and control anywhere in the world and accessing some of the resources that have been developed and that are part of this African Partnerships for Patient Safety, who want to perhaps use this powerful catalyst that joining this movement can bring and help to build that culture that places the safety of patients at the center. There is now a web-based registration on the WHO patient safety homepages. Anybody can join, any partnership can join. You can access the tools, you can access a regular quarterly APPS newsletter to learn much more in depth about what's happening within the hospitals that are part of this network and contribute to this ongoing story and share your implementation experiences and your insights that are helping to build this momentum and to really assist the patients and the healthcare workers of the future who need improvement and tools and resources and support and collaboration now to stop unnecessary harm and to stop unnecessary infections. So on that note, there are details here of those websites, there are details of myself, my colleague in the African region, and Dr. Sham Syed, who some of you will be familiar with from previous webinars. And I'd like to hand back over to my host, Dr. Ella Granzi. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Julie, for this very clear, insightful and comprehensive presentation. For the participants, I would like to invite you to stay with us for some more minutes because I would like to exchange with Julie on a couple of questions regarding any questions that you might have on this presentation. As you know, you can email the Weber Training email, and your question will be forwarded to Julie Storr. Julie, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions because I know that although you presented many aspects, there is much, much more done by APPS on evaluation in particular. And I know that you and colleagues have done very interesting work on what are the aspects that northern hospitals have learned from the partnership. I just wanted to ask you if you can give us a couple of details about, in particular about infection control aspects that have been learned from UK hospitals or French hospitals from the partnership on their way of doing infection control?
Yep, that's a great question, Benedetta. There's a lot of work actually going on, and I didn't mention some organisations who we are collaborating with very closely. So we work very closely, and I'm sure some of the listeners will be familiar with the Tropical Health Education Trust, or FET, with ESTAIR. But certainly from a UK perspective, we know that there is an awful lot of work going on to try to identify some of those positive benefits of being part of a partnership program for countries such as the UK. It's often described as quite difficult to articulate. Many people, in fact, use rather soft language, and they will say that the benefits are you know, a little bit intangible, that they're all around professional development, that they're around leadership development and confidence. And I think that's true, and I think this is something we are certainly finding, but I think that that's important. I think that's an important aspect of being involved in this partnership work, that you as an individual practitioner can develop as a leader or professionally in a way that, you know, no course could ever prepare you for. So I think these benefits are not to be dismissed. They are real, and they are very tangible. There are some very hard benefits as well in terms of practicing infection prevention and control in the absence of resources. So it's going back to basics and tackling head on some of the issues, particularly around, let's say, infectious disease control. And I know some of our colleagues were out in Uganda, I think last year or the year before, when there was a potential Marburg problem, which really brought to the front all of their skills as infection control and ID practitioners. So there are some really useful examples. There, I think with regard to surveillance, stripping away some of the things that we perhaps are used to in UK hospitals, and actually re-looking at surveillance and not necessarily replicating what we're doing, but actually starting with a complete new set of eyes. And this is something very much that Lord Nigel Crisp, who is doing a lot of work on what we can learn from developing countries in developed countries, and some of you, the audience, will be familiar with the Turning the World Upside Down website, which has a whole set of case studies that give you very real examples, and apps is actually featured on there of what we can take away as a positive benefit of being part of this partnership. But I think it is around rethinking some of our processes, looking at reinforcing the lean approach to healthcare, and there are some really, you know, very real examples of people who have benefited from a professional and personal development perspective. But I think it's a problem that people will say that it is quite hard to make it sound very hard and concrete, but I nonetheless truly believe from my interactions with colleagues that there are benefits, and that we have articulated a number of them already.
Yes, of course, I fully agree. It's quite difficult to measure, but I think that the aspects you highlighted are very clearly in the direction that there are many lessons learned, and some of these are really quite unexpected, and I think that this aspect is worth being developed in terms of qualitative investigations for the present and the future. I have another very quick question to ask you, which is about again about evaluation, and is about whether in any of the partnerships there was capacity to measure infections, and therefore possibility to measure the actual impact of actions implemented in the field of infection control to reduce the burden of HAIs in these settings. I'm asking this because I think this is particularly important to motivate others to invest. And maybe if you also know if there is any information or study on the cost effectiveness of these interventions in these low-resourced settings.
In terms of surveillance, we do have a number of the partnerships that have undertaken the prevalence studies. So this is going to give some data, but to be, you know, to be perfectly honest, that has been a big challenge to establish surveillance. It's something that they are working towards as part of their longer term plans, but it's very similar to some of the challenges we faced with the first global patient safety challenge. I know that we've had some very strong expertise involved in one of the partnerships in particular on surveillance, and there have been the development of protocols to try to introduce good surveillance, but it's something that's lagged behind the actual improvements that have been implemented. And I think that's probably a feature of all of the partnership hospitals, because it's a much more sort of system-wide problem that needs addressing beyond just an individual local hospital. But yes, in answer to the question, we do have some data. I think that will improve over time, and I know that there's work ongoing with places like, you know, Shaheen Mehta and the work that she's doing to try to address surveillance, but it's been a huge barrier in many of the hospitals, so very limited information, but some information.
Okay, so thanks again. Actually, as you recalled, this has been an issue also for our hand hygiene program, and we know very well that this is a barrier in settings with limited resources.
Yes.
But I think that it's good that these kind of approaches, such as apps, which are very comprehensive, can stimulate, catalyze future actions in terms of surveillance and inclusion of it in ongoing work about patient safety and infection control, because we know that this aspect is quite important for people to be motivated and to sustain their efforts. So many thanks again, and I hope that you will be participating in our series in 2014 as well, with the new information, new enthusiasm, which I'm sure you will keep very much alive. And I would like to remind the participants about the next teleclass, which is on November 11, related to antimicrobial resistance issues worldwide and the WHO approach to combat it, by Dr. Carmen Pessoa da Silva from WHO. She's the team leader for the antimicrobial resistance group in WHO, and actually WHO is developing strong new strategies and approaches on this topic, and I'm sure that this presentation will be very insightful and will give us perspectives for the future. And I would like to let the participants know, actually, that antimicrobial resistance will be the focus of our actions towards 5th of May 2014, the Global Hand Hygiene Day. So we will try to prepare for this day by linking antimicrobial resistance issues and hand hygiene, and therefore those of you who are part of Save Lives, Clean Your Hands, please be prepared to come on board and initiate activities and planning for 5th of May next year. Thank you very much again. Thanks again to Weber Training for hosting us today again, and see you or be together next time on November 11th. Goodbye, everyone, and thank you very much again, Julie. Bye-bye.